roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Goz. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Well, let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty. Here on a Thursday, it is fight week. It's a run of three shows in 8 weeks, starting with this Saturday. Max Holloway and Calvin Kattar. It's called UFC on ABC1. That's right, I said it, ABC. The UFC is on the American Broadcasting Corporation. I hope it's what it stands for the first time. So that's huge. You know, I was watching First Take, it's called, on ESPN. Earlier, Dana White was a guest, and they were talking about bringing combat sports back to ABC, and I was like, huh? Wasn't too sure, but they meant ABC, Wide World of Sport. Like, whoa, they went really, really deep into the 80s and 70s. That was a tremendous show when you were, if you were around at that time and you were a kid, they brought it all, man. And that's why I know random facts. We had a listener from Austria. I think he still listens to the show. His name's Howie D from Austria. And he called me one time because he wanted to come to a junkie gathering. And I go, Austria, I go, didn't you guys produce? He goes, Arnold Schwarzenegger. I go, well, yeah, but Franz Klammer. He goes, whoa, how'd you know that one? From ABC Wide World of Sports. He was a skier. But, yeah, man, I used to be glued to the TV. It was 3:30 Pacific on Saturdays for an hour and a half, and they would just kind of take you around the world, you know, and you'd watch a bunch of different sports. It was an awesome, awesome show. So, anyway, yeah, they're on ABC. It's Holloway versus Kattar. Then we got Magny versus Chiesa next week. And, of course, UFC 257, McGregor versus Dustin Poirier, unfortunately not for a title, but still, that's those are your three main events. Eight fights, 3 days, all basically, three fights, 8 days. Haven't had my breakfast yet. Anyway, so we're going to cover all that, go over the latest news, and we're going to talk to John Morgan. He'll be patching in from Abu Dhabi. So buckle up, folks. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, January 14th.
Hola amigos, Danny Segura dropping in. Just wanted to let you know about MMA Junkie's latest podcast. It's Hablemos MMA, a weekly Spanish language show dedicated to all things professional fighting. Each Monday, we recap the major events from the weekend, plus we analyze the week's biggest news. We also bring you exclusive interviews with the best fighters, coaches, and experts in the Hispanic and Latin American scene. You can find Hablemos MMA every Monday morning on your favorite podcasting platform. Suscríbete y nos hablamos pronto. Chao.
Goz, were you too little of a guy to remember Wide World of Sports? Did you catch the tail end of that show?
Hell no. I loved Wild World of Sports. The thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Dude, it was awesome. ABC was the shit back then. They did that, and then they did Battle of the Network Stars, which was incredible too. Oh, man. I used to love ABC.
Now, that said, even though I gave those guys a plug like they need it, they're one of the most massive shows ever. Shout out to Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman. I almost said Holloway. And Molly Karam as well, an MMA fan. Boy, they lobbed Dana White some softball questions. In fact, I would almost say that if a softball team was listening, they would be offended. It wasn't even fast-pitch softball. It wasn't even underhand, slow pitch softball. It was co-ed work league softball. You know, where you stick like some secretary that's awful in right field, like that, man. It was, I don't know. Like, they asked him, Dana, you know, you're one of the biggest stars in the UFC, aren't you? It's like, oh, come on, man. We've covered that one. You know, talk about McGregor's influence and how you guys went to a new level after the Mayweather fight. No, bitch, we've done it on our own. I mean, of course, yeah, I mean, maybe we brought over some boxing people, but a lot of people knew what the UFC was, who Conor McGregor was, you know, what MMA was prior to that fight. And I guess we may have made some fans that night, but, you know, it was basically hardcore MMA, hardcore boxing coming together. Conor had produced some good numbers on his own, and of course Floyd had produced some good numbers on his own. So yeah, were new fans made, I suppose, but I don't think it's any different from new fans that are just made from every card that comes through. You know, MMA has its own pulse. So
I don't think any fan, I mean, obviously maybe a couple, but I don't think there was that many fans that were made that night. I mean, they were watching a completely different sport, right? It would be like if you saw, I always use the comparison of Usain Bolt racing whoever the fastest wide receiver, let's just say Antonio Brown, in a race. If you saw that and went, wow, racing's cool, you're not going to say, now I'm going to watch the NFL. Like, I honestly don't see any crossover that night, really, not at all.
Our guy lost in their sport, you know? So, you know, it was just, I guess, look, the plugs got in. I hear you, but I wish Brett or Ariel or Mark could submit a few questions to these guys that they could address. You know, like, I really want to know, again, let's hear it from all the angles. And maybe John can update us on this, because he sat down with Dana. Why isn't the title fight that's coming up for a title? If you're going to touch on Conor, touch more importantly on why it's not for a title. And have you had that meeting with Habib yet? And, you know, do you feel like you may have misplayed that hand? I mean, 3 months ago is when he fought. Let me see, October 24th, November 24th, December 24th. We're closing in, 2.5 months ago. This is a division that pops. I mean, this is a division that should have some. If it's a five-minute meeting, then I think that five-minute meeting, if it's like a, hell yeah, I'm in, then Dana's going to be like, well, why didn't you say so earlier, right? And then he goes, no, I said I'm out. And Dana's willing to just accept that. There's not this tremendous PowerPoint presentation or some sort of a speech, or he brings in Liddell to talk about, you know, you're going to regret it or whatever. Then, I suppose that just could have been handled, I don't know, like a long time ago, and we could be previewing an upcoming fight with some clarity on what the co-main event means. I mean, Hooker and Chandler would be shooting for 155, not 156, just in case something happens to one of the other two guys. You know, we don't want that to happen, but, you know, they're there for some insurance as well. I don't know, man. Whatever. You know, it's done. It was a spot that was done earlier today, and that's that. Check out our interview with Dana White. John probably got to about 20 questions with Dana, and it's not too time-consuming. I think they got it done in less than 12 minutes. Some stuff was addressed there. I enjoyed that 100 times more than I enjoyed this spot.
George, I want to ask you, just because it got brought up in the chat, Chili Billy was saying Wild World of Sports is the shit, you got to bring it back. If they did bring it back, what would be like your top three sports that you would want to see?
Okay. A good boxing match would be nice, because it was a 90-minute show.
Remember, they would do like odd sports. So, like, what if they did a dodgeball or something like that? Or
nah, that's a waste of time. That's
you cool. Dodgeball? The countries around the world?
No, if we're gonna bring it back, then I want to bring back downhill skiing. You know, something involving skiing. You know, that's how I got to know Eric Heiden, the American who won 5 gold medals. You know, speed skating, I guess it was called. Mm-hmm. So some form of a winter sport, we'll say. How about that? I'll throw a big blanket over that, and boxing, and then it goes. I used to watch a lot of Iran versus the USA, Cuba versus Turkey in wrestling. You know, they would have those matches that you always hear King Mo and Daniel Cormier talk about, not just the Olympics, but meets, actual meets. Or like what happened last night with Jordan Burroughs and Dave Taylor, you know, stuff like that, except it would be country pride, you know. So that was pretty cool. That's how I knew of Teofilo Stevenson, the great Cuban boxer who never got to box professionally because Cuba doesn't allow their athletes to basically leave the country. You know, but your Ali's of the world, Derry Holmes, all those guys, you know, it was always like, yeah, but could you beat Teofilo Stevenson? Which I'm sure a few could, but I'm sure a few would have a tough time with him too. So I think I would stick to some majors. And if once a month somebody wants to drift off and have, you know, be a little goofy, I guess, and do the shuffleboard or, okay, dodgeball, sure. But we're not going to bring back that classic for that.
I don't understand why you're giving dodgeball such a roll of the eyes. If you've got countries involved and you got dudes just hucking these balls at each other, people getting hit in the head and the nuts.
Look, I can watch that on YouTube. I could just watch that on YouTube and I'm okay, you know. But I don't know. A proper sport with proper athletes, you know, I think I'd rather watch it on ABC Wide World of Sports with, because they're going to pay big money. They're going to bring back Al Michaels. He's with NBC now, but I guess whoever the ABC squad is, they're going to bring those guys in and they're going to, you know, spend a lot of money. And I just don't want to waste 15, 20 minutes on something like that.
Man, I don't know. We used to watch roller derby back in the day, and this would be kind of like roller derby, but with real people.
Roller derby was cool. I'm not going to deny that. But, you know, how about Wide World of Sports Light 30 minutes afterwards? You know, they can point to it like Bill Maher when he says, hey, catch us for some overtime on YouTube. Yeah, same thing. When Wide World of Sports is over, catch us on some overtime on our ABC YouTube channel or whatever. Dodgeball, roller derby, archery, whatever, you know, that's fine. Skeet shooting. Remember skeet shooting on Hypersports?
Yeah. What's the one where there was they would do this on Wild World of Sports, I think, too. It's the one where you got to do a bunch of stuff, but one of them's actually going down on skis, and then they do like some kind of target shooting or something.
They call it the biathlon because you're skiing and you're shooting. Yeah. I never really understood it because I just thought they were two good sports to do separately, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm. Hey, let's see who the experts, the marksmen are in different forms of competition with shooting. And then if you can ski, great. I want to see you going down the hill, not cross country skiing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's like saying, I don't want to watch NASCAR. I just want to see people coast at 70 miles an hour on the 15. What fun is that?
All right.
Our guest is ready to go. John Morgan patching in from Abu Dhabi.
The Counter, an NFL podcast from USA Today Sports, featuring For the Win's Stephen Ruiz and Chris Corman.
I know people are like just assuming that this is an upgrade at the quarterback position, but I don't think we could say that for a fact. I'd say it's a downgrade.
He never really had game-to-game impact, just coming off the edge and destroying people that we thought when we saw his athleticism in college and at the combine.
The Counter, diving deeper into the NFL with advanced stats, film study, and expert guests. This is The Counter.
Listen and subscribe to The Counter on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, or wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
There he is, John Morgan, live from Abu Dhabi. John, thank God you did that interview with Dana White. You got me 20 great, great answers to 20 great questions. I had to sit through First Take about 15 minutes ago, and I couldn't believe the Stone Age questions they were throwing at Dana then. So great job on that. Great job to the whole editorial team for pushing out a lot of those stories.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it, man. It was kind of cool, like that Dana was willing to give us a little time fresh off the bat, you know, to be here. It's back in Fight Island, you know, third time now. And, man, you just want to get what you can while you're here. It's a long flight over here, and we're stuck in the bubble, so it's good to be able to get whatever we can while we're here. And, man, especially while we were just killing time waiting to get to these fights.
Did you guys, once the office hours were over, were you able to get a drink there? He's got a nice little bar. He's got or maybe if it was work hours, he's got a juice bar. He's got a pretty swanky room.
Yeah, no. We got the invite for the interview. We didn't get the invite for the refreshments afterwards, man. Oh. It was we turned the camera off and they kicked us on back down to the media room. So no, we got a little glimpse of the high life, but at the end of the day, they know who we are. They send us back where we belong.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but Dana, I'm not sure how open he's been about it, but I know that he's been open. And what I'm getting to is, I think it was maybe on the same trip that I met you and Daniela. It was on one of those trips to Ohio for the annual trip that they would have, you know, where the UFC would piggyback the Arnolds. So I was back there, and Dana and Lorenzo had this little party, you know, at one of the clubs in Columbus. And he was huge on I don't drink. He just wasn't touching anything as of about, I guess, 15 years ago. And I think what he was a little open about was that he had a problem with it, you know. So I'm glad he was able to moderate it, and he's pretty damn open about it now. But, yeah, at one point he didn't drink at all.
Damn, that's crazy. I actually didn't know that. I didn't remember that. I can't say I joined him in that decision-making process.
Glad he came to his senses, right?
Exactly.
Hey, tell me now, Abu Dhabi isn't shut down like it was before. Before it was like a 10-mile radius, and now you guys just have, what, like pockets within the city?
Yeah, it's a little bit different setup this time around. So instead of like a whole safe zone where we kind of have free roam of the whole thing, you know, instead it's basically just the W Hotel, which is where the UFC staff and fighters are at, the Crown Plaza, which is where we are, the media is here, the officials and some of the crew and that sort of thing is here, and then Etihad Arena, which is a new venue as well. So it's a venue that's still kind of under construction, and that's basically it. So it's a lot different experience this time around. It's not a free roaming bubble. You know, we've got security basically at the doors that make sure that we're not out and just kind of walking around. You know, before we could actually walk between the venues and kind of wander around a little bit, which kind of sucked because it was so hot and humid at the time. We really didn't do that. Now it's absolutely beautiful. It's about 75 degrees outside most days, and we can't wander around. So it's a little bit different, but it just goes to show. I mean, the UAE, Abu Dhabi, I mean, they're kind of back open for business, right? I mean, they've done a great job of COVID-19 safety and kind of getting ahead and pushing ahead on this. So they're basically open for business, and we're kind of operating as like a little tiny, you know, mini bubble inside of the place. So it's a whole different setup this time around. I tell you what, I've said I feel bad for some of the people that are here for the first time, like Mike Bond, for instance, here for the first time. You know, before, of course, we're here to work, man. We're here for business. But, you know, you get to sneak down to Yas Beach or whatever and go, you'll go hang out, maybe ride a jet ski or something, or go, you know, have a little cocktail under an umbrella on the beach, that sort of thing. Now, there's none of that, man. There's none of that. So it's a little bit different experience. But, hey, man, we're still here working. And, you know, there's still a commitment to safety. And we still got some big fights on the horizon.
John, you and Goz used to bust my balls that – when we did the 9 a.m. start, I'd slip in there at 8:58, 8:59. Abu Dhabi, man, I can't hold a candle to them. Every single time there's either a boxing, wrestling, or MMA event, they're building an arena to the last minute. I thought it was kind of like a joke when I saw Mike Bond with the hard hat with Farah Hanoun as well, our colleague. But this is a new arena that they're touching up, or are they just doing some renovation? Or what is it about them building arenas like in 10 days?
Yeah, no, this is a brand new facility. So this will be more of a permanent structure once it gets done. It's called Etihad Arena. I believe it's an 18,000 seat, you know, kind of multi-purpose venue. It looks like it's going to be really nice. Now, you're not going to be able to tell on fight night that it's still under construction because the bowl area, you know, kind of where the cage is set up, all that, it's pretty much done. But the concourses and some of the back area and that sort of thing, I mean, literally as we walked in today to go watch the face-offs and just to get a quick peek of it, I mean, you could smell the paint, you know what I mean? It's still being finished up like that. But it's going to be a beautiful facility, and this will be, you know, where the UFC does events from now on, and also where they, you know, they bring other kind of, you know, world-class entertainment type stuff. So it's going to be fantastic. Basically, those days are done. You know, the idea of having to build these temporary facilities, these temporary structures, that'll be done with the completion of Etihad Arena, but they still got a little ways to go on it. So it's going to be it's going to look good on TV. Just know that it's not 100% done, but it's moving in that direction. That looks like it's going to be the future home of the UFC.
We're hearing 2,000 fans will be there, and obviously they're going to just social distance. And how close will they be to fighters? Like, can a fan high-five a fighter as he's either walking in or walking out? And if so, would that be a concern, bringing the public close to not only the fighters but production and obviously you guys, because you guys are there for eight days, three shows?
Yeah, no, from my understanding, everything's still going to be kind of kept off. Now, just to be clear, you know, the 2,000 fans or so that are in the building, you know, they have to undergo, you know, kind of rapid tests within 48 hours, the PCR test, I believe is what it's called. You know, so they have to show a negative test within 48 hours. There's all these safety guidelines in place. And again, you know, it's kind of being finished out as we were walking through today, and we didn't get the full tour. We were actually just kind of walking through in order to go see the Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar face-off. But as we got through there, we could see, you know, kind of plexiglass along the way of where the seats are. that are divided between the seats and the floor. So, you know, we haven't seen the fully completed setup. It was still being finished up as we were there. But, you know, it looks like everything's going to be cordoned off and kind of sectioned. You know, I think, you know, even though the UAE is kind of back open for business, I mean, I think the UFC is still kind of operating as a bubble and trying to keep people, you know, as separated as they can and kind of in this bubble concept as they can. So it's unique. It's gonna be interesting. This is, you know, this is gonna be totally different than what we saw in Jacksonville. It's gonna be totally different than what we've seen at the USC Apex, and it's gonna be totally different than what we've seen in the previous two trips to USC Fight Island. So it's interesting. I'll definitely be tuned in to see what things look like. Be scoping it out on Saturday night.
Do you know why the UFC decided to go on ABC, but at, early afternoon, early morning offering, as opposed to, a more traditional late start?
You know, they didn't talk about it here as far as, you know, I talked to Dana White a little bit about the ABC thing. And, he just said, hey, they asked us to be on there. We're happy to do it. There wasn't a lot of discussion about it, but I can tell you from three trips to Fight Island, the traditional slots back home in the United States are in the middle of the night here. And it's tough. It's really, really tough on the fighters. I don't think they like to make excuses, but it's just really hard to kind of shift your entire schedule to being nocturnal, you know, where you're basically trying to stay awake at night and be ready for an athletic contest and sleep during the day when the sun is out. It's just tough. And then with the media obligations back home and all those things, to be honest with you, the schedule of having, you know, those earlier fights is just much easier for us on the ground here and much easier for the athletes. And so, you know, listen, it's going to be interesting, right? I mean, they're on network television, but they're going against NFL playoffs. And so it's kind of going to be a weird setup for the debut of the UFC on ABC. But, I think it's a step in the right direction. Hopefully it's a partnership that continues. There's no long-term plans that have been announced right now. It's just the one show, and we don't know if it's ever going to happen again. You have to think it's going to be more than a one-time thing. But, no, nobody's mentioned it specifically, but I can just tell you from an operational standpoint, from a fighter standpoint, it is way, way easier to do the shows that end up, airing in the early morning back home.
No doubt. All right, last one for me, and then I'm sure go through the run of questions for you.
I just wanted to clear something up for George. NFL playoffs is when your team advances to the next round past the regular season. All right, go ahead, George.
All right. So, John, Holloway versus Cater could have title implications in the sense that if Holloway were to win and Ortega were to defeat Volkanovski, there's a clear opening there with Holloway owning a win over Ortega. But if Volkanovski wins and Holloway wins, well, we're stuck with that guy lost to him twice in a title shot, which, as we know, going back in the past, Joanna versus Rose, Weidman and Anderson, you know, Tito and Chuck. It's tough to get that third shot. But has Dana given you any inclination as to maybe Holloway could catch us a certain break because he's a pretty popular fighter? And there was a little doubt on fight number two where a lot of people had Holloway winning.
I think you laid out the scenario perfect. I mean, I think that's the way it's got to play out. And Dana didn't really want to commit to that. I mean, right now we don't even have a date for Volkanovski and Ortega. He did confirm to me, look, that is still our plan. That's what we plan on doing with the next featherweight title fight. But he didn't say when it's going to happen. But listen, just common sense dictates exactly what you just said there. And that's no disrespect, to anybody involved. But if Volkanovski wins and Holloway wins, I think you're going to have a tough time making that matchup again right away. Ortega wins, now you get something pretty exciting because their first fight was pretty fantastic the first time around. So who wouldn't want to see the rematch of that, man? It was a phenomenal fight. So I think this is one of those ones. I mean, normally when we ask Dane about it, he says, well, we got to wait and see. We got to figure out what's happening. Normally at that time, I feel like he's kind of playing with us a little bit, right? He's trying to slow play us a little bit, like, you know what's going on. This time, I really do believe it matters. Hey, we got to see how things play out. I don't think the title implications here are clear. Now, Calvin Kattar believes that if he wins this fight, he deserves a title shot. And listen, he'd at least be in the discussion, that's for sure. Max Holloway believes if he wins here that he should be able to go back and get what he thinks is rightfully his. So, I mean, there are implications, but I don't think other than the idea of a potential Holloway and Ortega rematch, you can draw any clear, direct lines.
John, Dana White said he's going to be meeting with Habib again. In your opinion, when they finally sit down, he said it's going to be a short meeting. Do you believe he's just going to give him more of what he's already offered in the past, whether that's exposure or money, whatever? Or do you believe like there could be an ace up his sleeve, something that he's never dangled in front of a fighter that he could be dangling in front of Habib this time.
Listen, if you take Dana at his word, there's no real offers to be made at this point. I think the hard push has already been made. I think the pitch has already been made. I think he's already probably laid it out. He said, listen, we've had conversations. We've had text messages. We've had all this. What I'm looking for basically is a yes or a no, and that's all it's going to be. I mean, it doesn't sound like there's any more pitch to be made. You know, what the pitch ultimately entailed, I don't know. You know, I mean, certainly it would seem that, you know, the Conor McGregor rematch would be a massive, massive moneymaker for everybody involved. But, you know, as everybody around the Habib camp has said, look, money isn't primary motivation at this point. And, you know, does he want to deal with the hassles and the headaches again? I mean, that was a pretty contentious buildup, man. And that to me went well beyond just, you know, hey, let's say some bad things about each other and stir this up in the media and we'll hug it out afterwards. I mean, there were some real earnest feelings behind that. So I'm still not convinced. I mean, it does seem a shame to think about Habib fighting at this level right now and competing the way he is would walk away at 29-0, but I'm not convinced that he won't either. So, I don't have a real good feeling of this either way. I think Habib Nurmagomedov is a unique human being. He's got a different set of morals, principles, and values that are worth more to him than money in a lot of ways. And I think he's unique like that. I think that's difficult for some people to understand. You go, oh, he doesn't need the money anymore. He doesn't need it, but who wouldn't want another 50 or 60 million in the bank, you know? But I think he's one of those people that could say, no, I'm fine just the way I am. I don't need to go through that again. So, listen, I think this could still go either way.
If Conor McGregor loses against Dustin Poirier, does Habib's value drop as well?
To some degree, yes. I mean, not overall. I mean, the guy is a certified superstar, man. He's got such a global appeal. I don't think people understand back home in the United States, if I'm being honest with you. Like, I think we all go, oh, yeah, Habib's a big star. Nah, I don't think you get it, man. You come here and you see it. It's a whole different level. It's completely different than what you understand back in the United States. This dude is a superstar on his own. So, you know, in much the same way when Conor McGregor books a fight, it's almost like Conor McGregor versus whoever. You know what I mean? We just want to see Conor McGregor fight. I think you can do the same with Habib. But do you say, does his value drop a little bit? Yeah, you know, I kind of think like, you know, what is it? Who wants to be a millionaire? Or do you want whatever that thing is? Who make a deal where you got like the banker and you take the suitcases? You know what I'm talking about. The value drops a little bit, right? When you take away the biggest payday, the offer that comes in from the banker is a little bit less. So yeah, it probably does drop a little bit, but not a lot.
If you were to take the amount of fighters that are going to be competing over the next 3 weeks and you look at them, a lot of them have either fought on Fight Island or have fought with no fans. Conor McGregor is a guy that has not really experienced this yet. Do you think that's going to play any factor? Because it's a dude who's used to having the Irish in town and the whole week of them chanting and then the weigh-ins, all that stuff. It's a spectacle when Conor fights. This is going to be a little different, man. This is going to be really, really strange. Is that going to affect him at any capacity?
I am interested to see that. I don't think so. I think Conor McGregor is so mentally strong. And I think, you know, what he can do in terms of visualization and what he can do in terms of, you know, just turning that switch mentally. You know, I think he's one of those guys. You see fighters that stand up on the edge of the cage, right? Like they're still a fan. You know, they give it to the crowd, you know, that sort of thing. I think he actually will, you know, be able to envision that the crowd is there. I think he can do that sort of thing. But it is going to be weird for everybody involved. You know, it's going to be so weird. I think that's the one thing we've been not worried about, but wondering how things would play out. You know, if he's competing not in front of a live crowd, at least there's going to be 2,000. At least it's going to be in a big venue, right? It's not the small, you know, I don't want to say Flash Forum is a tent, but it's a smaller building. We'll see. But I believe he's so mentally strong that it's not going to impact his performance.
Dana White teased a little bit of a bomb that could possibly drop maybe over the summer. The first thing that kind of popped in our minds was the new stadium in Vegas. You know, there's been rumors of the hotel and all that. But to me, those aren't bombs because I think we all assume that eventually they would get to the stadium. And we've all heard other rumors. So in your opinion, have you thought about it a little bit more? What could possibly be this bomb that he might drop?
Man, who knows at this point, right? I mean, I don't understand the world anymore. I struggle to predict anything. You know, I was talking to Oscar Willis from the Mac Life earlier, and we were saying, you know, what do you think? How many times are we going to back here in Abu Dhabi this year? It's like, well, hold on, we're talking about, you know, medical distribution and vaccines and development. Like, who the hell knows what we're talking about anymore? So no, I mean, I don't. I think, man, there's so many steps down the line that I feel like it, you know, it could be really anything. And I just feel like there's so much uncertainty in the world as well that I just don't know. I don't even know which direction it would be in. So, no, I wish I could tell you I had a little bit more educated guess on that. But, you know, in much the same way that USC President Dana White has said, you know, he doesn't even understand his own business anymore, I feel like some things are so far and left. I mean, yeah, dude, when they said they were opening up a hotel, okay, look, that just baffled me. I mean, you think about when he said we're going to an island. I mean, just all this stuff. You're like, what are you talking about? So, dude, it could be anything at this point.
How about one of them television contracts like the NBA, the NFL, NHL, where it's, you know, on that level? That would be pretty cool. But I think they're just so committed to streaming that you instantly shut that one down. But I remember the NBA had a contract like $24 billion across 6 years. I was like, now that's some dough there. I was telling Ghost maybe a stadium tour, not just one stadium show, but we're going to hit three stadiums. We're going to back to Curitiba. We're going to do something in Australia. And of course, culminate with Vegas. You know, could they do that? Could they buy another promotion? It's been a while since they've bought another promotion. That would certainly be a bomb. But yeah, man, the wheels have been spinning for us.
But see, here's the thing is, I don't think a new television contract would be like, hey, bro, we just put so much more money in the bank. Like, bro, I don't care. You know what I mean? That's your business practices. And buying a promotion, I mean, would you tease that, you know, potentially 6 months out? I mean, wouldn't that kind of ruin your business leverage and the negotiations and that sort of thing? So I don't know, man. It's going to be crazy to see exactly what it is. I mean, I'm certainly at that time, we'll look back and I guess we'll either go, yeah, that was a bomb, or no, these were Jack's action figures or something. You said we're going to be a big deal. I don't know. We'll find out.
I have. I want to go back to Habib. Are you okay on time, or do you guys have any more duties? Okay. So I think a way to entice Habib would be promise of a stadium show in Moscow, I guess. I was thinking a UFC PI for the area where Habib grew up in. You know, Dagestan's a country, but obviously, more specifically, when we've seen footage of Habib, he comes from like a village in Dagestan. Maybe something there where it would be like for the community. So now Habib would think, wow, okay, me fighting again could be beneficial to a lot of people. So you're kind of tugging on heartstrings a little bit rather than depositing more money in the bank, which in the end, it still circles back to more money in the bank. And then the last thing I thought was give Habib a chance to win a second title at 165, create a whole division for Habib, you know, And I think that would appeal to both Conor and Habib. And I hate saying it that way because I'm not discounting Dustin Poirier. And I feel like the poor guy is being discounted every time, you know, a storyline comes up like that. But I should say the winner, I guess, of Conor and Poirier. It's just that I believe Habib, Dana's more angling for the first fight. But something like that. And then lastly, guys, at this point, wouldn't he be better off if he's going to play a little bit of a mind game with him? Let him decide after fight night, because beforehand, it's too late to say, oh, you're not in? Okay, well, this is for a title fight, because he's already announced that it's not for a title fight. So why not wait maybe till the end and let's see if the juices start flowing. If either guy wins, especially Conor, and Conor can just get in his face and maybe he says, where are the papers? I'll sign them right now. I mean, at this point, should he just maybe wait a little bit more now since he's waited this long?
Yeah, it's interesting, right? I mean, a lot of possibilities on the table there. Look, I don't know that these necessarily qualify as you know, that type of announcement from Dana, but I do love all the things you're saying about Habib and kind of tug at the heartstrings a little bit. I think that's, you know, I guess it would kind of be repeating the play, right? Because that's what you did with Dustin Poirier. You said, let's make this thing for the Good Fight Foundation and all that. So, you know, maybe it would seem like you were just kind of repeating the playbook a little bit. But I do think that more has to happen here to get Habib interested other than just, you know, a big paycheck. You know, you do something, hey man, we're going to help the community. We're going to do something. We're going to invest in, you know, your team and your region, your area, that sort of thing. So I do think some kind of play like that would be beneficial, but I do kind of like what you're saying as well. Like, you know, maybe Habib would say, listen, you know, in this 5 minute meeting, you know, I'm saying no for now, but let me see what happens, you know, a week later. It doesn't seem to hurt to let things play out. But I mean, at that point, you know, if you're not really interested in facing Conor McGregor again, which we don't think he is, maybe he is, but if you're not really interested in that again, are you really going to be interested in facing Dustin again? And that's no, again, like you said, no disrespect to Dustin Poirier, you know, a legend of the sport, both as a fighter and a man. I mean, I think we all look up to who he is as a human being. But, you know, is that really what gets Habib to fight again? Again, we're talking about a man of different morals, different principles, different character, that isn't necessarily just worried about, you know, cashing in on a paycheck.
Yeah. And, you know, I hope that if Habib does come back, I mean, I know 30 is a round number, but I'd love to see him come back for a set of fights if he is going to commit, you know, and not just Conor. But guys, remember him and Nate Diaz had some beef as well. And Nate ticks that box in terms of a superstar fight. I mean, Nate was the dance partner that helped Conor eventually break some records in the UFC. So I don't know. How can we draw out the Diaz brother? Maybe again at 165. I know people will say, come on, how are you going to do that? But look, they promoted Israel Adesanya versus Yoel Romero, and Yoel was on a little bit of a tailspin and directly coming off a loss to Costa, yet they went ahead and promoted that. So the UFC is not shy about if a fight with bad blood presents itself or just something that has to happen, then we just go ahead and do it. So I'm trying to think of all the angles because I really want to see Habib continue to compete. I just think his last few fights, he was outstanding, man. How can we lose a talent like that?
I understand what you're saying. And when I shake my head, I want to make it clear, I'm not shaking my head that Nate Diaz isn't a superstar. He is, man. He's one of the biggest stars in the sport too. Again, I just don't know if that's what gets Habib excited and motivated. And that's what I mean. Look, the name, he's already said it a million times. It's Georges St. Pierre. Is Georges St. Pierre going to happen? I don't know. I can't tell where Georges St. Pierre's head is at. You know, one second he's doing an interview saying maybe, but probably not. I mean, I think that a legacy fight between those two would be incredible. Like you said, 165, if you wanted to roll that out, but Dana has been adamantly against that for so long. So I'm not necessarily going to buy into that. I mean, look, there's a lot. If you're looking for a name, the name is Georges St. Pierre, but I just don't know that Nate Diaz is that that's what gets Habib, you know, oh yeah, I'm ready to go back into training camp to do that. I'm ready to, you know, I just don't see. I think you got to think outside of the box on this. It's not about a name. I mean, maybe Tony Ferguson. I mean, that's a fight that, you know, I think you know, there's some value there, but I just don't know. It's going to be something more. I think it's going to be more than a name and more than a paycheck. It's got to be something different to appeal.
John, last question. The Spencer Fisher story was pretty much fresh by the time you actually got to talk to Dana, and you were more in a quick hit type of a deal there. You guys had, you know, three fights or 8 days to talk about. But do you think after, if you get another chance to sit with them, or do you think the general media consensus will be to have a little bit more of a follow-up? Hell, I don't even know if Dana's read the whole article or just kind of heard the main talking points, but I'd like to hear a little bit more, like, as far from not just him, but the UFC, if he directs it to someone else within the UFC. I appreciate that they donate to the different studies that are here in Las Vegas and, you know, other studies that have been done regarding TBI. But aside from just giving money, is there something that they can do to implement, you know, because I don't think Spencer Fisher is going to be the last case. And then I also wanted to get your thoughts, what you thought about reading the article and what you were feeling, you know, because I've seen a lot of people say, oh, man, I shiver to think that I'm a part of this. You know, I cover the sport, and some people, you know, take it harder than others.
Yeah, no, listen, it was a great piece from Steven Morocco, right, our former colleague. He did a fantastic job. This is something he's literally been working on for years. You know, so much to unpack here. It really is. I mean, do I think Dana White read the article? No, I don't think Dana White read the article, but I don't think he needs to. I think he's well aware of the details that are involved. And I mean, you're talking about a situation that he lived, you know what I mean? So I don't think that there's necessarily going to be any new information in there that he wasn't aware of. So it is terribly unfortunate. I mean, we've been talking about it on the ground here with fighters here, you know, talking to Matt Brown, talking to Carlos Condit, who both echoed, you know, concern for long-term for their own brain health, but also admitted that they got into the sport understanding that there is inherent risk in the sport itself, and that's just never going to go away. There is inherent risk in combat sports, and, you know, brain health is important, and the study that's going on at the Cleveland Clinic is trying to do, the job of you know, identifying and finding these precursors of people that may show early signs of this. So you know, you don't have to wait until it's full blown CTA and to deal with it at the end, you know, of life, which is unfortunately the only way to diagnose it right now. So listen, it's a stark reminder, I think, to everybody that's a fan of this sport. I mean, it's a sport that we all love and it's an amazing sport. But it is one that the athletes involved put their health and safety on the line. You know, sometimes we say, oh, they're risking their lives. And it may sound like, you know, hyperbole that you're making stuff up. No, they really are. They're putting their health and safety on the line for our entertainment. Now, yes, for their own financial gain as well. It's not surely for our entertainment. This is a choice that they make. This is not, you know, gladiators being forced into combat or something in the Colosseum because they're prisoners of wars. I mean, it's not that. All right. I mean, they're making a conscious decision here. But it's a stark reminder of what's at stake here. And so when you want to, you know, talk trash about some random fighter or whatever the case may be, you know, understand what these people are doing. And, you know, the USC needs to continue to help fund this research. You know, they're looking into the hallucinogenics and, you know, what those things can do as well. You know, there's studies on that and brain health. I mean, there's, you know, I just spoke to the doctors at the Cleveland Clinic the other day. It's amazing the advancements they're making, but we have to continue to be aggressive about that and continue to develop as best we can. And look, it would be amazing to see something for fighters at the end of their career to be taken care of in some way, you know, whether it be, you know, insurance, medical bills, something, you know, retirement. I don't know what it would be. It's tough to get fighters together to unionize, to make an association, to whatever. We've seen, you know, those efforts over the years kind of come up short. But hopefully, you know, items like this will catch people's attention and they'll think about it and they'll continue to focus on it. You know, as I said, Matt Brown and Carlos Condit were two guys that both said, yeah, man, we read the story. It resonated with us. It's a real concern. It's things that people do need to be focused on in this industry.
And both of those guys might retire. They haven't put it outside the realm of possibility that this could be their last fight, win or lose. At least they seem to have read that from both guys.
I think I have to take credit for that. That was my bold prediction.
What's your bold prediction? You ruined it all.
I know.
All right, guys. Well, all right, John. Thank you again for popping in here. I'm really not sure what time it is. You might either be on your way to bed or just waking up. More than likely on your way to bed, because I think it's just opposite of what we're working with. So great job as always out there with the team. And thanks for popping in here on MMA Junkie Radio today.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, guys.
All right, we'll see you. All right, there you have it, folks. Follow him on Twitter at MMA Junkie John. And again, shout out to the team. We got three soldiers out there, John, Mike, and Fada. So expect great coverage across the next 8 days. Well, more than that, really. These guys have been there now for about a week, maybe. So it'll probably be about a two-week run for the three shows in 8 days. There you go. And like we covered with John, the show on ABC, it doesn't hurt to give you guys reminders. The fights start, folks, at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on ESPN+. Looks like we get about 8 of them. Check that, 6 of them. I believe probably the website's probably updated now. Sometimes fights fall out or they get moved. So it looks like 6 of them at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific this Saturday. So that's noontime on the East Coast and obviously breakfast time on the Pacific time zone. I don't say West Coast because even though Goz and I are West Coasters, we're in a desert right now. And then they move to ABC at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 p.m. Pacific. So that's where you get, let's see here, 5 fights, starting with Puna Soriano versus Dusko Todorovic, 2 undefeated fighters, Joaquin Buckley versus Alessio De Chicrio. Buckley got KO of the year on many publications, deservedly so. Li Jingliang versus Santiago Ponzinibbio. That welterweight division is popping. Continuing with the 170 division, Matt Brown versus Carlos Condit, two legends of the game, two guys that have fought many great wars, you know, throughout their careers, but two guys that seem to be winding down their careers as well. And then, of course, the main event with Max Holloway and Calvin Kattar. And by the way, I know we started off by talking about Holloway, mentioning him a lot. I'm picking Kattar, actually, in this fight. I think he's going to win, and so that's going to solve the problem of what do you do with a very popular and legendary fighter like Max Holloway? And what do you do with him when you can't pencil him in somehow, you know, or give him some sort of a path towards the title. I mean, if he wins, it's still going to be tough, but I think it's Cater that wins. But I have a lot of respect for Max Holloway because, you know, you can just think of five great title fights that he's had right off the top of your head. And we're so used to seeing him in title fights. Anything less than that just doesn't seem the same.
I think what happens is when you think about when he fought at 155, that was just kind of a development. I think now if he were to suffer a loss here, I think he would move up to 155 and I think he would just make that his permanent home and kind of figure out how to carry that weight on his body. He's a big kid for 145. So I think he would fill in nicely at 155 and I think he would have a new home there. But the thing about Max Holloway is you always tune in when you see him on the card. When he's there, when you see his name, if there's fans allowed, you buy tickets. If he's on TV, you buy the pay-per-view. Because he performs, he always gives you an honest fight. So I think that kid's going to be just fine. But as far as title hopes at 145 go, it's just a really long road back, I think, for that kid if he suffers a loss.
You know what the worst scenario for Dust for Max is at 155? Huh. I just kind of gave away the answer. If Dustin becomes champ because he's 0-2 against him. Yeah. But there's some openings there. And Max showed me more power in his shots in this last fight. He developed, I think, a little bit more power. He looked a little bit leaner. And he was more diverse in his attack against Max Holloway. Against Alex Volkanovski. I had him winning that fight. So I would be excited for him to have a permanent or at least a semi-permanent move to 155 and have a go there and properly put on some weight. But he does have the luxury of seeing, you know, what could happen with Ortega and Volkanovski, which, by the way, I did hear another interview. They said, I think it was Kevin Ioli with Dana White. And Dana said that fight will be made later this year. And I think Kevin said, well, you know, throw us a bone, man, like spring, summer. And then Dana said, in a couple months. So I think by April, maybe we'll be seeing Ortega versus Holloway. I can wait that long, you know, if I have to if there's the angle where Max wins. To see what might be next for him. But again, I have Calvin Kattar winning on Saturday.
I do too. The one I haven't made up my mind on yet is Connor and Poirier. But Kattar, I just feel like it's the angles that he fights in. It's his way that he engages and gets out of trouble. And I think Max has always just been too willing to take a shot to give one, or to take a couple to give one. And Calvin Kattar is very pinpoint with his striking. And you look at that big elbow he threw. I think that elbow will come into play in this fight. I think he can cut Max. I think it's a bad matchup for Max, to be honest. I have Calvin Kattar winning as well.
Yeah, I think he's better offensively and defensively with his hands. I think Max is willing to engage a little bit more, and that's probably what makes fights exciting for some of these guys that are volume strikers and also will take one to let one go. But against Kattar, man, you got to be really, really careful because Kattar does have that one punch power, and you know, he can put you down. And I know I just finished saying that Holloway's developed a little bit more, that he does have a little bit more of the one punch power than before. At least that's what I noticed in the Volkanovski fight. He was cracking a lot harder than I've seen him before, but I don't know if it'll be enough. He has the experience over five rounds, so that's something that, you know, he carries in his hip pocket. I don't know if it'll make it five rounds. Again, both guys tend to start off a little slow. I think they like to gauge distance and timing, and they're patient. They don't really come out of the gate, you know, from what I recall for both guys. But it's going to pick up, folks. It's going to be a great fight to have on ABC for sure.
Have you thought a little bit more about what Dana's bomb could be?
Well,
I'd like to throw a firecracker out there. I don't know if it's a bomb.
Sure.
PI on the East Coast. I don't know why that hasn't happened.
That's not a bomb. I think a bomb is something that
I call it a firecracker.
Oh, you did call it a firecracker. Okay. That's a firecracker, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's happening soon.
A bomb would be five UFC PIs all on the same day, you know, all with the presidents of the actual PIs. Let me bring in so-and-so. He will be the director of or the president of our UFC PI in Puerto Rico. I now want to announce this gentleman or lady. They're going to be spearheading the two in Mexico. He always says there's going to be two or three, so I'll say two. Let me introduce this person. They're going to head the UFC PI in Lima, Peru. Let me introduce this person. Yes, the East Coast one. Where would the East Coast one be? What's a good location? Probably Southern. I seem to think there's way more fighters in South, like in Florida, than in the New York, Boston area. But I could be wrong.
I think you got to find something. Yeah.
Florida's a business decision, too, you know, like. So many companies go there because of the tax situation. And then for our sport, it's been a haven, I guess we could call it. So I'd say that one. And then they probably need one in Europe. And I guess a big hub is for them is I think they have an office in London. So either one there or how about France? If they're going to start bringing in some of the fighters, I think France is pretty well situated where you can – you got France and Italy that's around it. And then you got Germany and the Netherlands. And then you have the tunnel that brings you the fighters from the UK. Mm-hmm. So, and France produces a lot of great athletes. And I'm not talking about just combat sports, but the, you know, when you watch the Olympics, like they're very good at judo, they're very good at soccer, you know, and I don't know. I just think that would be a good spot.
Not bad. You know, we touched on, I can't remember when we touched on it. I think we did something for our other show, our Triple G show, where we touched on the Spencer Fisher interview a little bit. And this is done by Stephen Morocco, a former colleague of ours here at MMA Junkie, and now works for MMA Fighting. And we talked a little bit about brain trauma and things that are coming that are going to start coming out in our sport a little bit. You know, our sport's older now. So some of these guys are retired. They're going through stuff, not just brain trauma, but just injuries in general. Right. And when you think about guys like Mark Coleman, right, and the surgeries that he's had for his hip, and you know, there's been a lot of fighters that have had to, that can barely walk now because of this sport. What I wanted to ask you was all this starting to go out. I had mentioned, I believe, that the Fertitta brothers sold their portion of the business when they did because they foresaw this coming. I think a lot of people foresaw this coming because it's happened in a lot of combat sports. So what can they do? Like, a lot of people didn't like Dana White's comments personally, the way he responded to some of these questions. One thing that I believe they can do that I believe is also a big turning point in this sport that a lot of people don't talk about, but I've been saying this for years, that I think was very important in this regard, was when they decided every main event had to be five rounds, because they added so much more training camps, so much more mileage on their fighters, that instantly, it almost like running backs. When we grew up, George, running backs, they played like 10 years, 12 years. They were still tough. Now they got like 3 years, three years of, because guys are so much stronger, faster, they hit harder. There's so many injuries. I think something similar happened with the MMA fighter, where their shelf life is shorter now because a lot of them have to look at how much mileage Frankie Edgar's had to log in. Max Holloway, right? Like, a lot of these guys fight only exclusively as main event fighters. I think one thing that maybe they can do that I see them, this is another bold prediction, if this starts to pick up steam, I really think that's another thing that maybe they might say only title fights are five rounds. Everything goes back to three, because it really does add a lot of mileage to fighters.
I'd like to see that. I'd like to see it. I mean, I found myself saying a few times, and I know I've heard Rogan say it, oh, man, I wish we had two more rounds. Trust me, I've said it. But this article will go a long way, I think. It'll resonate. I think you have that lawsuit as well, where there's a lot of frustrated fighters, and it's not just pay. I think it's them realizing the damage that was done to them. Now, I've also said many times, not to ride a fence, we're all grown-ups here. We all know what the risks are and what we sign up for. Nobody's forcing them to do it. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that everyone can't collectively come together to make the sport safer. Because at one time, the sport existed and then it went away too. You know, so we took a step backward and then a couple steps forward. That's when we ran the regulation. We went to the commissions and said, okay, what's the deal here? You know, well, do we have to make up rules or what? You know, because back in the day, there were no time limits. And there was basically everything was allowed other than fish hooking and kicking to the, or no, back then, I think everything was allowed back then except for a clear fish hook and. And that was it, because as Joe Son of Kupchak's were allowed. But anyway, you know, I remember it used to be like a two-horse race between extreme weight cutting and TBI as far as like what's really, really going to hurt the sport eventually if we don't get a hold of it. And it seems like we made a lot of progress. Part of it came from the commission's actually saying, no, look, we need to give them more time to rehydrate. We went to 36 hours before instead of 24 hours before. And a lot of the fighters loved it. And then the UFC's done a lot in terms of hydration, you know, keeping them, giving them the right stuff after a weigh-in instead of sending them off on their own, you know what I mean? And helping them throughout the week, creating this PI where they can kind of look into your molecular buildup, we'll say, you know, your anatomy, your blueprint, and seeing what weight class you should fight at, what weight you should conduct yourself in, you know, or be in when you're doing a camp, recovery, things like that. So I feel like that part they've addressed, and I'm sure they'll continue to address. But yes, TBI, I appreciate the studies, the donations, and things like that, but now how can we put that in play? Now, the UFC can't oversee 600 fighters and probably 50 to 100 coaches. You can't. I mean, they're all over the world, you know, but what they can do is control, I guess, how many times they put you through a camp. Like, we all have a great appreciation for what Kevin Holland did, right? And thankfully, he went 5-0, you know, and he probably didn't take too much damage. But maybe should there be a limit of what you can do, you know, in terms of booking somebody that many times and tearing them down? Because he went through a camp. He still had to go through a weight cut. He put himself through a lot. It worked out. It got him on the map. You know, he's just short of being a superstar, I suppose. A couple more big wins, and I think that's what he is. But how can the UFC, you know, control that? I don't know, man. I think the UFC should maybe force every fighter to come to the PI and undergo all those cognitive tests and see where you're at, you know, before they book you, at least for the year. And the obvious, creating some sort of a retirement, you know, for these fighters. I think a lot of them fight to get that final paycheck, but if they had the assurance that a couple grand a month for starters, or a grand a month, I don't know, or their health benefits was awaiting them, you know, when they retire, that sure would be, you know, I think a relief. I think it would put a lot of minds at ease. Man, I don't know. I just think once the fighter gets involved in this life, they are hooked and they will fight till the wheels come off. A lot of them say it. And I think these promoters know it. And so without being explicit about it, I think they take advantage of it. You know what I mean? And they'll get as much use out of you until, guess what? You lost 4 in a row, bro. We got to cut you. Or you're making too much money, bro. You know, we got to cut you. And that's it. And it's probably sad, but I think you become callous to it. So once you fire somebody for the first time, you probably can't eat your dinner that night. You know, what's wrong, honey? Man, I had to let someone go, you know, or whatever. And then you do it 10 times and it's just a phone call and it's no big deal. And you can go out and drink with the boys that night. So I think that just has happened in our sport.
It's such a serious issue. And it's one that you and I personally have seen firsthand, you know, many times. It's obviously we can't name names or anything like that, or we can't really say too much, but I mean, How many times have you been around certain people where they say they'll tell you something, and then like 20 minutes they'll say the same thing, and then 20 minutes later same thing, and they just don't see it. They've changed so much throughout the years. Some of these people, when you talk to them, it is rough. It is a very, very rough sport. And like George said, they knew what they were getting into going in to a certain extent, I think. And then little by little, they had to learn along the ways. But things like what
Steve... It's not 100% UFC. It's not 100%. The fighters know, and that's why I say that. Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, no. Yeah, and if you read that article and you read about some of the stories that Spencer talked about, just what goes on in the gym. You know, like we've seen how gyms have sort of evolved as well and learned a little bit along the ways. But they've made adjustments. And that's the thing. At some point, the UFC is going to get backed into a corner where they're going to have to make some sort of an adjustment that they could say, this is what we're doing to try and combat this. We've seen certain gyms saying, hey, we've taken down sparring from 3 times a week to 2 times, to 1 time, to light. Something's got to be done, though, because this is going to turn very, very ugly.
Well, Goz, you know, here's another thing. You know, every once in a while, we either do it on Spinning Back Click or here, we talk about Ultimate Fighter. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of it anymore. But do we really need someone to fight to get in the house? And then be one of 16 that is going to come out and hopefully 4 of it make it onto the roster. You got your winner and then the ones that look good that we're going to keep. Do we need them to cut weight really quickly across 6 weeks, 3 times, and put themselves in a predicament where they get clocked? You know, there's been fighters that have won and still can't remember where they're at. You know, you can still be concussed and win. And so do we really, really need that just to find the ultimate? Look, the Ultimate Fighter saved, arguably, the promotion. I get that. But we got a beautiful thing in Dana White Contender Series. Let's just stick with that. Did you impress enough tonight? Great, you're in. And if not, okay, well, then I suppose you come back. But I don't know that we need to just – like, reality TV exists. It's been on fire. Everyone looks for different angles, but – Tuesday night's pretty real to me. You know what I mean? When they do it, I'm just good with that. And I don't know, man. I think fighters might have to start doing probably less amateur. Definitely be smarter about training. But I don't see why you would want to give away 2 KOs in the amateur rank, you know, before you're even 10-0. You know, you've already been knocked out 3 times, you know, once in sparring at practice. Maybe you had a serious one before you became an MMA fighter because you played high school football. And then 2, you know, one on the regional scene and 1 as an amateur fighter. Whatever. I don't know. I think I covered 4 there. Do you really, really want to do that even before you're getting to the big fights that are really going to pay a lot? I don't know. Mapping out a fighter, the path of the fighter, I think needs to be studied a little bit more. And hopefully those big agents kind of have a good grasp on that. All right. Well, listen, we're right up on the clock here, so we're going to bow out. Thank you so much for tuning in, everybody. Don't forget that on Saturday the 23rd, Goz and I are going to be hosting the UFC 257 Watch Along on Sportscaster. So it's going to be great. It's going to be fun hanging out with you guys as we watch the pay-per-view together. If you order it, great. We'd love to still have you with us. You can turn the volume on them or turn the volume on us and just chat, right? Get instant feedback from other people that are scoring rounds or can chime in on the developments of the fight card as it's taking place. But if you don't order it, we got you. We'll be describing the action, especially on those big, big fights. We get into play-by-play and color commentary mode, but it's just a good hangout, and it's been a fun ride doing these on Sportscaster. So join us again on the 23rd for McGregor versus Poirier, UFC 257, Michael Chandler versus Dan Hooker. That fight card is sick. And always catch us here Mondays and Thursdays live at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific for MMA Junkie Radio. If you missed it, any part of it, you can always just stay within our page here. And you can catch, you know, different parts of the show, or you can go back and catch other shows as well. On Twitter and Instagram, Goz can be followed at the Goz, THEGOZE, and I'm at MMA Junkie George. And again, I want to thank our guest, John Morgan, who patched in from Abu Dhabi. He's out there covering the event for us. Follow him on Twitter at MMA Junkie John. Folks, we're out of here. Enjoy your Thursday. Enjoy your weekend. Do not forget the early start time, noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific for the prelims on ESPN+. 3 Eastern, noon Pacific, for the fights on ABC. Tell all your friends. They don't have to pay. They don't have to download. They don't have to stream. It's going to be proper on ABC on Saturday. Max Holloway versus Calvin Kattar in the main event. All right, folks, we're out of here. Go out there and be a champion.